WBCA Radio is proud to present City Talk, where fascinating conversation is alive and well, with your host, Boston radio veteran Ken Meyer.
Every once in a while, you run into a person that is one of the nicest you've ever worked with. The only problem is you don't get to work with them long enough. And such a person is our guest. She is Laura Carlo, who is host of the early morning classical music program on WCRB-FM here in Boston. So, Laura, it's finally good to sit down and be able to talk serious with you.
Ken Meyer, it's been so long since we worked together, but you've always remained a great friend and colleague through the years. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I really appreciate that. Now, in one of our earlier chats, you told me that you worked with Chet and Natalie and did a lot of writing for them. Yeah. But tell us how that, what led up to all that? What was the spark that got you to say, I want to get into radio?
Well, I actually started in college.
Which was where?
Boston College. I'm a Boston girl, native. And I had very old-fashioned parents who didn't want me living away from home during college. So I had to find a local school that I could commute to. And my mom had gone to BU and BC in her day. She went to BC Knights. And when I toured the BC campus, I just knew that was the place for me. And I was so happy to get in. And I was a political science major. My actual career goal at age 17 was to become a diplomat and work for the diplomatic corps. I have a great facility with foreign languages, and I just wanted to do that kind of work. When I got to BC, a girl I went to high school with, who was 3 years older, I ran into her on campus, and she said, come to the radio station on site and pick me up after my radio show, and we'll go for coffee. I got there a little bit early. She was still doing her show. And while I was hanging around in the waiting room, I noticed on the bulletin board a sign that said, if you have an idea for a radio show of any kind, write up a proposal and submit it to the student program director. And I thought about it and I thought, well, you know, it could be fun because it was mostly a music station. I said, they don't do any talk shows here. What if I proposed a talk show with newsmakers who had something to say to college students? So I wrote it up. And lo and behold, the program director liked it and said, I'll give you a shot. And my show, Kaleidoscope, actually ran for the 4 years that I was in school. And something transformative happened. Because when I got behind that microphone, I found out that I loved it. And yeah, it's that media magic,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
And I ended up switching my major to communications. I never got rid of political science, so I have a minor in poli sci. And I loved being on the air so much. I went to communications/journalism and went into the news business. And so when I left college, all my resumes went to any radio station that had a news department. And that's how the career started, with a little bulletin board notice on a college radio station.
Now, was Channel 5 the first place that you worked?
No, I actually, my first job was in radio. And I worked at an AM news and talk station down in Fall River, which isn't there anymore. But it was all news and all talk 24 hours a day. I take that back. It was a day timer. They hired me first as a stringer reporter when they had stories that they needed covered, but not enough news people to cover them. They would string you along, in other words, and they would call you in to cover. So, my very first day on the job, I covered a Boston, sorry, Fall River City Council meeting. And I think the first week on the job, I covered a murder suicide outside a Fall River bar. And got to see horrendous things, like right first week of working. And the horror of it aside, I knew I was doing what I was meant to do. And I did that, rising from stringer reporter to news director in less than 4 years. And while we did some really good work down there, and we won a national first place best news reporting from United Press International, we made a lot of good inroads for local radio down there. And then
Did you?
I just needed to come home, and I started sending resumes to Boston radio stations. And I got an interview right away at WCRB, and they hired me as the morning news person to join the morning music host. And I did that for another 6 or 7 years before a news director, our program director, changed my job description, which we can talk about later. But while I was doing WCRB, I also had friends in the news business, and one of them worked at Channel 5 and said, "They're looking for news writers for Chet and Natalie in the evening. Why don't you apply?" So I did, and I got the job, and I worked from 3 to 11 in the morning at WCRB, and then I'd go home and eat and change, and then I'd make it into Channel 5 and write news stories for the 6 o'clock evening news. And I did that mostly on an as-needed basis, but there were quite a few as-needed days, and I did that for about 6 months when the producer of Frank Avruch's Sunday morning talk show approached me and said, "We need a news director for that show. Would you be interested?" Yes. So I was news writer and news producer of Frank Avruch's Sunday morning show for a couple of years. It got to be too much, and I ended up leaving on my own because you can't do a full-time job and a part-time job that could turn into a full-time job if you let it. It was a lot. But I loved it while I was doing it.
Now, when you were working at CRB, did you interview anybody whose name we would recognize if we heard it?
Sure. It was a bunch of news interviews for the news portion of my job, but I also was lucky enough to do interviews for the music side of the radio station. For example, I interviewed Leonard Bernstein. I interviewed a number of times Yo-Yo Ma. I interviewed a number of times John Williams and Keith Lockhart. So many times I can't begin to count. Also, I did a daily show called CEO Spotlight. And that would run right after the financial news every afternoon. And what I would do is I would interview the CEOs or president, whatever was the higher title at any given company, of New England-based businesses. And it was up to me to find them and to invite them and then to interview them. And then I broke it up into a five little segments. So the first day was introductory. It followed a pattern. The second day was tell us what your product is or what your service is. And we would do that. Friday was my very important and special thing that I ended the week with, no matter who the guest was. And that was, what do you do for your company or with your company that is considered being a good neighbor? And if any of them ever said, well, we give people jobs, that didn't count for me. I wanted to know what their mission statement was that made them a good neighbor. And I interviewed so many people. If you named them from 20 years ago or 25 years ago, and they were the head of the company, I probably interviewed them. But their good neighbor things were everything from sustainable equipment and products to outreach with children, to creating a volunteer force with their staffs to go out into the community and do community cleanup days or food distribution, things that you wouldn't even think some companies would have been part of, but they were really, and people didn't know. And so I wanted to get that out. And so every day, 4 days of business talk, the fifth day being a good corporate neighbor. And we did that for probably about 5 or 6 years with never having a repeat. So I loved that project. That was really great.
Do you do any news work now besides just infroing a piece that was written by Tchaikovsky or anybody famous like that?
Not news per se. We don't have any news on our radio station. It's 24/7 music. But we also have a website, and I write a blog post for it, 1 or 2 a month, sometimes three if the subject matter presents itself. And I've done interviews with, for example, Dan Brown. You might remember him as the writer,
Code.
who wrote Da Vinci Code, exactly. And what people may not know is that he also wrote a symphony.
You're right. I didn't know that.
And so I interviewed him for a blog post, reminded everybody who he was, but then I also surprised everyone with. And he also wrote a symphony, a classical symphony, and I put embedded that into my blog post. So I try to find things like that for September going into October is National Hispanic History Month, and I introduced, for example, an MIT trained engineer who is one of the most highly sought contemporary classical composers in the world. Hector Elizondo. He is just the most amazing young man. So if you enjoy blog posts, all of them are archived on our website, and you can see some of my work that way. But actual hard news, no, it's just not done at the station anymore.
Now, how did you, when you worked, I know for a while because you did it on my program, you worked at WBZ Radio.
Right.
Were you working at CRB at the time as
No,
well?
no. When I was down in Fall River, I was actually covering a very big news story of the day, which came to be known as the Big Dan's Gang Rape Case. They even made a movie out of it, starring Jodie Foster. And BZ and WBCN, which you know is a rock station, but BCN, BZ, and of course all the other stations in Boston had a reporter down in the New Bedford courthouse every day. But for some reason, some of the Boston stations couldn't free up a reporter on the last day or two that the jury was deliberating. And so WBCN called me and said, can you send us stories? And my management didn't have a problem with that if I changed my name. And so I did. And then BZ called me and said the same thing. Can you do a story for us? And I said, yeah, well, I could, but I just want you to know that BCN has already asked me to send them a story. Well, can you still send us the story, but change your name again? So I ended up doing that, changing my name only, but it was the same news story. I also was feeding the story to the Marquee Broadcasting Network in Australia and to believe it or not, a news station in Tokyo, Japan, wanted to follow that case. So I was feeding all of them. And then after the case was over, the news director at BZ asked me if I would be willing to do weekend news on BZ because their regular weekend news person, who had been there for a very long time and had accrued a lot of vacation time, wanted to take weekends off. And so I said, yeah, I'd love to have Boston credit. And did it concurrently with my station in Fall River. So I have 5 days a week in Fall River, then Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday at BZ. And I did that for over a year, never taking a day off from either station. And then that got to be a little too much. And that's when I started to send resumes to whatever Boston radio stations might have a full-time opening, because I really wanted to come home. My parents, all my friends were still in Boston, and it was time to come home.
Yeah, they must have gotten a big kick out of hearing you on the air.
But my family was never like a starstruck family. I don't know how to explain it. It was like, yeah, she's just our kid.
Yeah.
Let me trust me, Ken. I have brother and sister, but especially my kid brother, who just what you did for a living meant nothing. He was still a professional kid brother and tease you to death. So we didn't stand on any ceremony in my family and never have.
Well, it's funny because when I was working at BZ, I did a Saturday night program, as you know, and my parents, because of BZ Signal, who were in Rochester, New York, my dad would turn on a tape recorder at midnight and they would tape the first couple hours of the show. And the next day I would get called and critiqued. As to what I did. So, well, it was kind of neat because my dad would read books, Remini, on tape and send them up to Boston if I was going to interview an author. So And naturally, he'd want to hear it and see how the author was. So they used to tape a lot of that stuff that I did. I wish I still had those tapes. And they'd call me the next day and say, geez, so-and-so was really good, or so-and-so, you really had to pull teeth to get them to answer questions. So, and my parents were very supportive. I don't know if how yours were or not, but, you know, they knew I wanted radio. I loved it ever since I was 8 years old. I was fascinated. My parents gave me a tape recorder for Christmas when I was 10.
Wow.
And from then on, the microphone fascinated me.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinated me. And I used, if it made a sound, I taped it those early years. I mean, I
love that.
Taped all kinds of television programs. I used to make up my own DJ shows and play records and listen to it back and everything. And I just loved radio from when I was 7 or 8 years old, right up, and still do now, still today. So
I
know what it means to be bitten by the bug, because there was nothing like it. And we were both at BZ at the time when all three major television stations here had their own talk shows, which meant you walk into BZ sometimes, you never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
And I shook hands with Beaver Kleber.
Very cool.
I didn't interview him, but I shook hands with him because he was on his way out the door. And the security guard said to me, hey, you want to meet Beaver Kleber? Oh, yeah. You know, I shook hands with him. I shook hands with Ted Koppel. I met Jimmy Carter twice.
Wow.
And those were the days when BZ was obviously much different than it is now. And I'm glad I was there at that time, because as we all know, radio has changed tremendously since the years that we both lived there.
It really has. And I was speaking with your producer a little earlier, and both of us feel that despite whatever the changes are, and despite the doom and gloom sayers saying, you know, this is going to be the death of radio, whatever, I don't think radio's going away. I think it's too important to too many people, and it's such an easy form of media that is so important around the world that I don't think it's going away anytime soon. I think other forms of media will go away before radio does.
Well, I'm glad of satellite radio and XM. I mean, I can sit here and listen to a ball game and hear the San Francisco Giants announcers with FM quality here in Boston.
Sure.
And I love that. I absolutely love it. But it's sad, because when I came to Boston in 1971 as a worker, I came in 67 as a college student. But when I came back to Boston and started working at BZ, you had three major radio stations all covering news stories. You had WRKO, you had WHGH, and you had WBZ. Now you only have one.
Right. Yeah.
It's a little different.
Well, GBH News and BUR News are also doing news and talk, but they are public stations. And I think you're talking about commercial radio.
Right.
Yeah. And at one point, an AM station that had great rock and roll, WEEI, went over to news. So we also had EEI as a news station for a while.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was there, you had, or when I came to Boston, you had people like Paul Benziquin.
Sure.
Jim Westover, mm-hmm. Len Lawrence, oh gosh. And they had CBS News, because at that time, WEEI was, to use a radio term, an O&O, mm-hmm. meaning owned and operated by CBS. And I was glad I was here because it was just a great time to be alive and be around radio in Boston or anywhere in a big city for that matter. And
we launched a lot of great careers too. This city sent a lot of great reporters out into the world.
Do you do any kind of interviews now, these days?
I am asked from time to time to interview classical music related people, but it's not anything that is part of really what my job is. I wish I could do more, to be honest with you. What I do end up doing now when I not doing my air shift is I love doing hosting or narrating at area symphony concerts. And, you know, there are some classical music pieces that need a narrator, or the entire concert needs an MC, and I'm hired to do that. I love doing that. I've done that kind of work for the Boston Civic Symphony, the Newton Symphony. In fact, I've just been booked for March of 2025 to do a concert with the Plymouth Symphony. They're going to do a family concert with classical music used in cartoons. And they asked if I would host that. So that kind of thing is what I'm doing. So it's air shift, hosting or narrating, and writing the blogs. That's pretty much what my, if you want to say, job description these days is.
Have you ever done a reading of The Night Before Christmas with a orchestra?
So many times, and usually with the Boston Pops.
Real?
Keith Lockhart has invited me to do, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, 9 or 10 times already.
No kidding.
I love doing that. And of course, I already had that poem in my memory banks, but there's a little bit of the what they call the ham in you. And I love doing the poem because it's committed to memory. I can act it out a little bit, and I like to have some fun with the orchestra and audience when I do it. So I think that's why Keith issues the invitation as much as he does.
Gosh, he's been
here a long
time. I'll
never turn that down.
Here a long time, hasn't he?
Yeah. What do you think? Maybe 25 years almost?
Yeah, I would be willing to guess that far. I have never met Keith Lockhart. I did meet, and I can't think of his name. He was here when Arthur Fiedler was the conductor of the Pops.
Uh-huh.
And we got him in. We did a documentary on the Boston Pops, and we got, I can't think of his name.
Was it Harry Dickinson?
That's it. Yes, Harry Dickinson. Yes.
Yeah, Harry Dickinson was, he's passed on now, but he was the stepdad to Mrs. Dukakis.
Ah, yes. Yes.
So many Boston ties with, I mean, this is a small city, but when you find out who's connected to who, it becomes even smaller. One of the things I love about my city.
Yep. Harry Ellis Dixon. That was the name.
Yeah.
And he was great.
Yeah.
He was just fabulous. Awesome. Now, a question that I ask people all the time that were in news, if you had all the money in the world and you had a radio station, what would you do with it?
Oh, you mean what would be my programming?
Yep.
Okay. Now you're going to see the inner fighting, because the music side of me wants to have a spectacular music station, and the news side of me wants to have a spectacular news station. And probably not news talk. I mean, 24-hour a day news, and hard news at that. So it would just depend on what side won. But of course, then you did say all the money in the world, I might have to have two stations. One each.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. When I used to listen to WEEI, they did their format well. They would have news from from 5 or 5:30 till 9 o'clock, and then go back to news again after talk at like 4:30 until 7:30, 8 o'clock, do another talk show, and then have a program called Music Till Dawn with a gentleman named Jack Lazar.
Oh, I don't remember that.
And they did it well. They did it well. And when I came here, they were number one, if you can believe that. Wow. In the ratings. They just did everything well, and I listen to EEI a lot more than I do now. Mm. Do you listen to radio these days?
Of course. It's my favorite medium.
Yeah, it's mine too, but I don't listen to it as much as I used to.
Yeah, I don't listen 24/7, but I do. I listen to news because I want to know that the world still exists when I wake up in the morning. You know, people ask me, do you only listen to classical music? And the answer is no. You know, I grew up as a rock and roll girl, and I am. Dream, you know, my teenage dream was to become a drummer for a rock band, which is kind of interesting because I never took drum lessons. I'm a pianist by instrument choice, but I love rock music. I like almost all music. I like rap. I like heavy metal. And I know that freaks out people when they hear that the morning program host on a classical music station likes these other forms of music. But I love music. And some very important classical people all have the same sentiment, that if it's good music, it doesn't matter what kind. And maybe that surprises people to say, wait a minute, classical people feel that way? Yeah. Yeah. Classical people understand that what we call classical music was the pop music of its day.
All right. If you had a takeaway from any interview that you have done that you'll remember the rest of your life and wish you could do over again because of the sheer joy of it. And if somebody asked me that question, I would say Raymond Burr. Now, asking you that same question as far as your news background and classical background.
Well, I must say I was very lucky to interview amazing people over the years, and people who, you know, had a public persona, so you would know them as a politician or as a business person or some other level that makes them a newsmaker, and didn't know their personal side and the stories of triumph over tragedy. Always impressed me. But maybe one of the finest people I ever met and interviewed and actually later developed a wonderful friendship with him and his wife was with Dr. Amar Bose, the founder of the Bose Corporation. About as genuine and decent a human being as anyone would have ever met. He considered himself, first and foremost, an MIT mathematics professor, which he did for over 40 years, by the way. And concurrently with his, he never gave it up, even when he was founding and launching his Bose Corporation. He had a genuine interest in other human beings, so that we knew the story that was true was that when MIT's Christmas parties were going on, for departments or professors, Dr. Bose would probably die that I'm telling you this, but he would go downstairs to the janitor's Christmas party and just hang with them. He believed that everybody had a story to tell. And he was more interested in you and your story than anybody asking him about himself. And it wasn't a fake persona. That is genuinely who that man was. I'm so sorry he passed away, because I would want to know what he thinks about things going on in the world today. He was brilliant. A math mind like you couldn't even imagine, and brilliant in research and development. Every profit that his company made, he put right back into the company. His people were well taken care of. His company was a huge success internationally. But he was always, as I like to tell the story, the little boy growing up in Philadelphia who would look out the window on Christmas Eve hoping to catch sight of Santa's sleigh. one of his stories to me. Yeah. So that I would put him at number one.
You mentioned Leonard Bernstein, and in my reading list, I have a couple of biographies about him, but I'll always remember watching some of those young people concerts that he used to be involved in and were televised, I think, on CBS television.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell me, is there anything specific you remember about him?
He was another brilliant mind. He went to Harvard, and he went to study music. At one point, he told a story that his father, who ran a beauty supply business, was absolutely shocked and saddened to think that his kid was not going to take over the family business. And the other thing people don't know is that Bernstein never played a musical instrument until he was about 10 years old, if I remember correctly, because they didn't, his parents truly believed he was going to take over the family business. This was not something that was necessary. And he could not deny the music that was inside his soul. And I remember thinking after that interview that if I were ever lucky enough to have a child, I don't care what the child told me he had an interest in, I would do everything in my power to expose my child to that hobby or interest area. Because who knows, maybe that would spark their lifelong passion. Bernstein had a long life and a long and varied career, but it was in spite of what his parents were willing to support. And that was a personal takeaway for me when he talked about that. Yeah.
The way radio and television is going now with the internet and satellite radio and everything else, is there as much interest in classical music now as there was, say, 10, 15, or even 20 years ago?
I don't know how you measure that, Ken. I mean, the Tanglewood concerts are sold out. You know, Boston Symphony Hall concerts are filling up again, you know, post-pandemic. Spotify has tons of different playlists for classical fans. I think that the colleges, the music conservatories that teach classical music are at no loss for students applying, whether they want to be instrumentalists, teachers, whatever in the field that they're interested in. I don't know if the audience changed age-wise. I don't know if the audiences have changed depth of interest-wise. In other words, is classical music your music, period? Or is it something I'm just going to dabble in? I don't know if that has changed, because there was a time where classical was the only music that some people listened to. But then, you know, I remember a story that Walter Cronkite said. You remember the great CBS news anchor?
Oh, of course.
And he told a story, and he said, a woman came up to him and said, "Oh, Mr. Cronkite, I only listen to your newscast." And his answer to her was, "I'm so sorry." And the reason he said that, and he was really clear, he said, "I don't want you to only get your news from one source. I want you to get your news from as many qualified sources as possible." And he was very serious about that. And I would like to amend that for music. You know, I of course, I'm flattered when people say, "Oh, I love listening to you in the morning." But I hope that that's not the only thing that they listen to. I hope, like me, they enjoy jazz. I hope they enjoy Brazilian samba music. I hope they enjoy world music, because all music has the ability to calm and help you reflect, propel you forward, and inspire you. All music has examples that can fit and empower your life. And there's nothing wrong with loving classical. I love classical. I played nothing but classical music and almost became a professional pianist. For a brief moment in time, actually thought I was going to make my career as a concert pianist. But while you can have a favorite kind of music, I hope you give all the arts a fair shake.
I will tell you a Walter Cronkite story. I never had the pleasure of meeting Cronkite, but I had dinner once with Ted Knight.
Oh, fun.
And there was an episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show where Cronkite was part of it. But it was very short. It wasn't like it revolved around him. He was supposedly a friend of Lou Grant's. And it turned out that after it was done, Cronkite had wished that he had more to do, because his secret desire was to be a song and dance man.
Oh.
Other than a newsman. And he was upset because he didn't get that much to do.
That's such a fun story. I never would have thought that of him.
I never would have either, but it's right from the horse's mouth. I mean, who knew better than Ted Knight, who witnessed it?
That's the thing I love about being able to interview people, because they have a public persona. And then if you're a really good interviewer, you can find out these little background stories, things that really make them tick or excited, and bring that to the fore too. That's one of the things that I loved about that aspect of my job back in the day.
Well, the nice thing, as I told you about BZ, was when I was there, they had the People Are Talking program
right
at 12:30 in the afternoon. And I can remember running into people like Lauren Green, for instance, and Vincent Price, and Red Skelton, and getting them all to agree to come over and do an interview with me for 10 or 15 minutes. And all I kept thinking was, wow, you know, I'm getting paid. And here I am meeting all these people. It's great. And I remember once when Art Linkletter was there, and I asked him the same thing. I said, do you have time to come over to BZ Radio and sit down with me in the studio and tape a few minutes? And he said, if we haven't got time, we'll make time. And he turned around and we walked out of the studio.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you love Lauren Green? I met him when I was a teenager. I thought he was the best.
I did. I adored Lauren Green. He was here promoting I don't think the show lasted too long, but Westinghouse was running a show on Sundays about animals. And I asked him, I said, you know, the only person I can ever think of that did shows on animals was a show called Zoo Parade with Marlo Perkins. And I said, is that what you're doing? And he got quite a kick out of that. And I adored Lauren Green. I met and interviewed and also adored Michael Landon, because I loved the Bonanza program. And
he died too young.
Oh, yeah. He died much, much too young. So did Dan Blockard.
Yeah.
Which I think, from what I've read, it killed the program. The ratings just went right after that, because the horse wasn't there, and everybody loved him.
Yeah.
As did I. And but you never knew when you came in, and it was always neat. You know, I walk in at night and run into Muhammad Ali. Shake hands with him, it's like, my God, my hand got lost, you know, because of did you ever have any experiences like that?
Well, I mentioned that I met Lauren Green when I was a teenager,
right?
And it was a lovely thing. I had won a speaking contest in high school when I was 14 years old. And that made me the youngest person to ever win it in Massachusetts. You had to write a speech, write and research a speech, and then deliver it. And I won for Massachusetts. And because of that, I was inducted into the Youth Hall of Fame.
Ah.
And that year, the Youth Hall of Fame was holding its annual gala dinner induction out in Salt Lake City. So I flew out there, and what I didn't know, and I was delighted to find out, is that it wasn't just a dinner, but it was a full weekend of things happening, and they would invite top leaders in different fields: medicine, business, arts and entertainment, sports. And each breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all the kids who were being inducted that year would be moved to another table, and you got to have breakfast with Lauren Green, for example. And I had lunch with Cloris Leachman one day. I had dinner with, oh, of course, now my brain cells are going to go. One of the Boston Celtics greats. No, John Havlicek.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So it was just one superstar at the top of the field after another for 4 days, I believe it was. There was only one person, only one celebrity who was a big disappointment. And I almost shot too shy to tell you who it was.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead.
It's just between us, right?
I love stories like that.
Well, everybody in the world loved James Stewart,
Jimmy Stewart?
the most miserable human being that weekend, at least, that I
Oh,
have ever
really?
met in my life.
Oh, that's too bad. He
He
was.
was beloved by everybody for all the characters he had played in the movies,
Yep.
but he was ornery, cantankerous, made it clear he didn't want the teenagers around him. Why did you say yes to coming to this then? I don't know. He was the most miserable human being. And I think for the 100 or however many kids that were there, that was probably the biggest shock and disappointment for all of us.
Yeah, I know what that's like. I had the chance to meet and talk with Rob Reiner,
Oh.
and I was friendly at the time with Milt Josephsberg, who was a writer for Jack Benny and Lucy and All in the Family, and he gave me some good things to be able to ask Rob Reiner. And Reiner was he didn't want to talk to me. He was here with his father. In a play of some kind, with the name of which I can't remember, but he was just absolutely miserable. And I said to him, I said, "Well, you sure ruined my image of you." And
You actually
that was,
said so?
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I had no problem with, 'cause I mean, he was nasty. He was nasty. It wasn't just, I mean, the only other person that I had a problem with, who wasn't nasty but didn't feel like doing an interview, was Robert Mitchum, of all people. He didn't want to be there being interviewed, and I didn't want to be there interviewing him, and we both knew how the other felt. It was kind of something that was unspoken,
Oh,
but he
that's grand.
wasn't nasty, whereas Rob Reiner was just, "Look, I don't want to talk to you." He didn't say that, but you could just read it in his voice and the way that he acted. I mean, he may be different now, I don't know, but
Well, I gotta tell you, Kenny, with all these years of interviews, whether it was for news or on the arts and entertainment side, I'm happy to tell you that 99.9% of the people I've met were delightful. They were inspirational if they were at the top of their particular career game. They were hopeful about the future of whatever the subject matter was. They were kind and caring. And maybe it was the way I positioned questions that brought that out. And maybe they just were genuinely that way. But I can say that 99.9% of everybody I met ended up being on Santa's good list.
I can say the same thing.
Yeah. And I'm happy to say that, because as human beings, we stare at accidents on the road. You know what I'm saying? That
yep.
We can get sucked into the gossip and the bad stuff. And that's too bad, because life is pretty short. And if we can celebrate and elevate, then that's the direction I've always believed we should go in. And I'm happy to say that most the people that I met filled that category more than the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can sit here and throw names at you, like Vince Bugliosi, Connie Francis, Raymond Burr. They were all great. They were just great. Our one last question. Are people, I don't know how to put this, are they harder to contact and get for interviews now than they used to be?
You know, you would think with all the social media ways to reach people that they would be easier to reach. But I think because of the danger between stalkers and just unhinged people that we hear about, they have to be more careful. So yeah, you have to go through more layers to get to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, I want to thank you for spending some time with us and discussing your thoughts on news and news people and all kinds of things. You are a great resource. You're honest, you're forthright, and that's besides being a charming human being.
Aren't you nice? Boy, I wish my mom was still alive to have heard that. And it was a delight to speak with you too. And I wish you continued success with this show. And
well, thank you. Thank you.
And let's keep hearing good things about Ken Meyer.
Yeah, and the same with Laura Carlo.
Thank you.
If Norma Nathan was around, we could give her a lot of good stuff to write.
True.
And thank you, Laura. Thank you so much. And that will do it for another edition of City Talk.
Thanks for listening to another great conversation with Ken Meyer and friends. You can contact Ken by email. The address is kjmeyer7@gmail.com. That's kjmeyer7@gmail.com. Tune in next time for more conversation with Ken Meyer on City Talk.